Since 1996, the Immigration and Naturalization Service has become one of the country's biggest jailers. Last year, the INS detained more than 180,000 people, triple the number in the early 1990s. Included are several hundred people detained in connection with the September 11th terrorist attacks. This week, NPR is examining how those attacks have affected immigration policy. Most of the INS detainees committed crimes, but quite a few, including asylum seekers fleeing countries such as Iraq and China, never have been convicted of a crime. Yet they often endure long incarcerations, and human rights activists say the detainees are denied rights that criminals take for granted. NPR's Philip Davis reports.
Security is tight at the Turner Gilford Night Jail in Miami. Alarm sound and steel and glass doors slam shut behind you as you enter. It's a maximum security prison designed to control hardened criminals. But these days, two entire pods of this prison are filled with non-criminals, 121 foreign women who say they've done nothing more than flee repression in their home countries. Before September 11th, many of these women might have been freed on bond while awaiting a hearing. Take, for example, the case of a 24-year-old computer studies student from Iraq who wants to be known only as Rita. Last year, Rita, who's Christian, refused to pledge her support to Saddam Hussein's ruling party. Afraid of government retaliation, she chose to flee, setting her sights on the U.S. Her mother had gotten U.S. residency and was living near Detroit. Rita left Iraq 8 months ago with only a visa to Ecuador. Asked why she didn't try to get a U.S. visa, she and a volunteer translator, who's also Iraqi, could only laugh.
There is no American embassy in Iraq. And if there was, I'll be executed before I enter the embassy.
4 months later, she arrived at Miami International Airport and asked for asylum. She didn't have the proper documents, and after a brief interview, an INS officer strode into the room and told her she was under arrest. Within hours, she found herself inside pod K46 of this maximum security prison where she's been ever since. At the jail, Rita was stripped of her personal belongings and jewelry. Her only clothing is a standard orange prison jumpsuit. No one except another Iraqi detainee speaks her language. No one will tell her when or if she'll be released. She tries a few words in English before returning to Arabic.
I'm very sad. Very, 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 very sad. And I don't know what in English because I'm not speak good English. I'm trying to do my best.
I feel absolute desperation, and sometimes I feel I'm going to die here. And it seems there is no hope whatsoever.
There is some hope for Rita. INS officials recently ruled her fear of being persecuted in Iraq is credible, a key step toward being granted refugee status. Local INS spokesman Rodney Germain, who was at the prison that day, said the agency is just doing its job when it detains asylum seekers like Rita.
Anybody who enters the United States in an illegal manner, of course, it's a violation of the law. And we're charged to uphold the law, and that's why we have to place many of these people in detention.
It all goes back to 1996, when Congress ordered detention for non-citizens who commit crimes, and in many cases for foreign visitors who didn't have permission to live in the U.S. The law said even minor crimes committed long ago could lead to prison or deportation. It also targeted illegal workers. Though the law was aimed at criminals, 40% of those detained have not been convicted of a crime. They include people, such as asylum seekers, who are caught in a bureaucratic limbo, waiting for their cases to be heard. Sometimes the difference between being freed on bond and spending months in jail is based on a decision by a local INS district director. Tony Tangeman is head of the INS's section on detention and removal.
District directors, based on their local knowledge, determine whether or not people should be detained. There's a mandatory category of people who should be detained, must be detained, and they have to do that. And then there's different categories that, based on the available bed space, then they will detain those individuals.
The result since 1996 has been a tripling of the number of people under INS custody. 188,000 people moved through the system last year alone. To deal with them, the INS is contracted with more than 1,400 jails across the country. Those jails vie for INS detainees because the agency sometimes pays more than $100 a day for them, and because such prisoners are usually nonviolent and easy to control. But despite the premium they command, the detainees don't get special treatment. Janelle Hall is spokeswoman for Turner Guilford Knight Prison, which gets $81 a night for each of its INS detainees.
We have to try to maintain an equal treatment sort of situation here in the jail, because when one population hears that another population is getting special treatment, then you have problems.
Wendy Young, a director at a nonprofit group called the Women's Commission for Refugee Women and Children, says the INS detention system is out of control.
They basically rent bed space where they can find it. So you find asylum seekers who have not committed any crime of any sort commingled with criminal offenders and treated just the same. They're wearing prison uniforms. They're very often handcuffed and shackled when transported. They have very limited access to the outdoors.
Human rights organizations say they've documented numerous cases of abuse and substandard prison conditions. In Miami, guards at the INS's Chrome Processing Center have been accused of sexually abusing female detainees. In Cranston, Rhode Island, detainees have complained that guards have beaten them and placed some of them in solitary confinement. In York, Pennsylvania, advocates say a 15-year-old girl from Sierra Leone, who still has scars from being tortured by rebels there, has been placed in a county jail and denied treatment for post-traumatic stress syndrome. Others have been held for 3, 4, and 5 years without their cases being resolved. Cheryl Little, the director of the nonprofit Florida Immigrant Advocacy Center, which is trying to help Rita, says in some respects the detainees have fewer rights than common criminals who are serving time.
At least when they were serving time, you know, they knew when they were going to get out, and they knew what the rules were, and that here the rules change every day.
Last year, a special team from the American Bar Association won from the INS a commitment to improve the way detainees are treated. The new standards include allowing detainees to use the telephone to read legal books and contact their lawyers. Arthur Helton is a lawyer and a member of the committee that helped design the standards.
These seem like very straightforward and almost obvious elements to make sure that people are connected to justice in America, but those have to be managed through these standards.
The INS says the standards are already in place in some of its larger detention facilities. Now they're supposed to go into effect at state and local jails. But forcing better treatment for detainees at hundreds of lockups around the country will be a big test of the INS's commitment to change. Philip Davis, NPR News, Miami.